they are as ruthless as he to gain his favor. Some are simply blind to the truth and fight for the lies they hear. And some find, once that guiding light is lit, that they are wearing chains, and then it is too late. Zed smoothed his sleeves down his arms as he sighed. There have always been wars, Richard. Every war is a murderous struggle between foes, and yet no army has ever marched into battle thinking that the Creator had sided with their enemy. Richard shook his head. It doesn't make sense. I am quite sure that Rahl's followers think we are bloodthirsty monsters, capable of anything. They will have been told endless tales of their enemies' ruthless brutality. I'm sure none of them know much about Darkon Rahl except what they have been told by Darkon Rahl. The wizard frowned, his intelligent eyes sharp. It may be a perversion of logic, but that makes it no less threatening or deadly. Rahl's followers need only to crush us. They don't have to understand anything else. But for you to win, against a stronger foe, you must use your head. Richard ran his fingers through his hair. That leaves me stuck in an awfully tight crack. I may have to let innocent people die, yet I can't kill Darkon Rahl. Zed gave him a meaningful look. No, I never said you couldn't kill Darkon Rahl. I said you couldn't use the sword to kill him. Richard looked intently over at his old friend, the moonlight dim on the other's angular face. Sparks of thought lit in the darkness of his mood. Zed, he asked quietly, have you had to do that? Have you had to let innocent people die? Zed's face turned hard and pensive. In the last war and again now, as we speak. Kaelin told me Rahl kills people to get my name. No one can give it, but he continues to kill in the hope someone will finally offer it. I could turn myself over to him to stop the killing, but then I wouldn't be able to help defeat him, and many more would die. It's a painful choice. Let a few die horribly, or let even more die horribly. I'm sorry, my friend. Richard wrapped his cloak tighter about himself, chilled from without and from within. He looked back out over the still landscape, then back at Zed. I met the Night Wisp, Shar, before she died. She gave her life to get Kaelin here, so others might live. Kaelin also bears the burden of letting others die. She does, Zed said softly. It makes my heart ache to know the things that girl's eyes have seen, and the things your eyes may have to see. Makes my problem about the two of us seem pretty small. Zed's expression was gentle with compassion, but not hurt any less. Richard made another scan of the countryside. Zed, one more thing. Before we reached your house, I offered Kaelin an apple. Zed gave a surprised laugh. You offered a red fruit to someone from the Midlands? That's tantamount to a death threat, my boy. In the Midlands, red fruit of any kind is deadly poison. Yes, I know that now, but I didn't at the time. Zed leaned over, lifting an eyebrow. What did she say? Richard looked at him sideways. It isn't what she said, it's what she did. She grabbed me by the throat. For a moment, I could see in her eyes that she was going to kill me. I don't know how she was going to kill me, but I'm sure she was going to do it. She hesitated long enough for me to explain. The point is, she was my friend, and she had saved my life several times, but in that instant she was going to kill me. Richard paused. That's part of what you are saying, isn't it? Zed let out a long breath and nodded. It is. Richard, if you suspected I was a traitor, weren't sure, just suspected, and you knew that if it were true, our cause would be lost, would you be able to kill me? If you had no time or way to find the truth, only the strong belief I was a traitor, and only you knew, could you kill me on the spot? Could you come at me, your old friend, with lethal intent, with enough violence to see the job done? Zed's stare burned into him. Richard was stunned. I don't know. Well, you had better know that you could, or you have no business going after Rahl. You won't have the resolve to live, to win. You may be called upon to make a life-and-death decision instantly. Kayla knows this. She knows the consequences if she fails. She has the resolve. She hesitated, though. From what you're saying, she made a mistake. I could have overpowered her. She should have killed me before I had a chance to. Richard frowned. And she would have been wrong. Zed shook his head slowly. Don't flatter yourself, Richard. She had her hand on you. Anything you would have done wouldn't have been quick enough. All it would have taken is a thought on her part. She was in control and could afford to give you the chance to explain. She made no mistake. A little shaken, Richard still wasn't ready to concede the issue. But you wouldn't, you couldn't be a traitor to us. Just as I would never hurt her. I don't see the point. The point is, even though I wouldn't, if I did, you have to be prepared to act. You have to have the strength to do even that, if necessary. The point is that even though Kayla knew you were her friend and wouldn't hurt her, when she thought you were trying to, she was prepared to act. If you hadn't quickly made her believe you, she would have. Richard sat in silence for a moment, watching his friend. Zed, if it were the other way around, if you thought I was a danger to our cause, well, you know, could you... The wizard leaned back, frowning, and without a hint of emotion in his voice said, in a twinkling. The answer appalled Richard, but he understood what his friend was telling him, even if the whole idea seemed far-fetched. Anything less than total commitment could spell their failure. If they faltered, Rahl would not be merciful. They would die. It was that simple. "Still want to be Seeker?" Zed asked. Richard stared out at nothing. "Yes." "Scared?" "To the bone." Zed patted his knee. "Good. Me too. I would worry only if you were not." The Seeker gave the wizard an icy glare. "I intend to make Dark and Rahl afraid, too." Zed smiled and nodded. "You're going to make a good Seeker, my boy. Have faith." Richard gave a mental shudder at the thought of Kaelin killing him just for offering her an apple. He frowned. "Zed, why are all red fruits in the Midlands deadly poison? It isn't natural." The wizard gave a sorrowful shake of his head. "Because, Richard, children like red fruit." Richard's frown deepened. "That doesn't make any sense." Zed looked down, pushing a bony finger at the dirt for a moment. "It was about this time of year, in the last war. The harvests were in. I had found a constructed magic. That's a magic made by wizards of long ago, something like the Boxes of Ordon. It was a poison magic, specific to color, and only able to cast one spell one time. I wasn't sure how it was used, but I knew it was dangerous." Zed took a deep breath and put his hands in his lap. "Anyway, Pontius Rahl got his hands on it, and figured out how to make it work. He knew children loved fruit, and wanted to strike a blow at our hearts. He used the magic to poison all red fruit. It's a little like the poison of the snake vine, slow at first. It took time for us to realize what caused the fever, and death. Pontius Rahl deliberately chose something he could be sure children, not just the adults, would eat. His voice was barely audible as he looked out into the darkness. A lot of people died. A lot of children. Richard's eyes were wide. If you found it, how did he get hold of it? Zed looked into Richard's eyes with an expression that could have frozen a summer day. I had a student, a young man I was training. One day I chanced upon him tinkering with something he shouldn't have been. I had an odd doubt about him. I knew something was wrong, but I was very fond of him, and so I didn't act upon my suspicion. Instead, I decided to think on it for the night. The next morning he was gone, and so was the constructed magic I had found. He had been a spy for Panis Rao. If I had acted when I should have and killed him, all those people, all those children, wouldn't have died. Richard swallowed. Zed, you couldn't have known. He thought that maybe the old man was going to yell or cry or storm off. But instead he only shrugged. Learn from my mistake, Richard. If you do, then all those lives won't have been lost for nothing. Maybe their story can be a lesson that will help save everyone from what Darkon Rall will do if he wins. Richard rubbed his arms, trying to work a bit of warmth back into them. Why isn't the red fruit in Westland poison? All magic has limits. This had a limit of distance from where it was used. It stretched as far as where the boundary between Westland and the Midlands went up. The boundary couldn't be put up where any of the poison spell was, or Westland would have had magic in it. Richard sat in the dark, cold silence, and thought for a time. At last he asked, "Is there any way to get rid of it? To make the red fruit no longer poison?" Zed smiled. Richard thought it was an odd thing to do, but he was glad to see it. "Thinking like a wizard, my boy. Thinking how to undo magic." He frowned in thought as he looked out into the night again. "There might be a way to remove the spell. I would have to study it and see what I could do. If we can defeat Darkon Rall, I intend to put my mind to the task." "Good." Richard tucked his cloak tighter. "Everyone should be able to eat an apple when they want, especially children." He looked over at the old man. "Said, I promise I will remember your lesson. I won't let you down. I won't let all those people who died be forgotten." Zed smiled and gave Richard's back an affectionate rub. The two friends sat in silence, sharing the stillness of the night and the quiet of each other's understanding, thinking about what they could not know, what was to come. Richard thought about what needed to be done, about Panis Rall, and about Darkon Rall. He thought about how hopeless everything seemed. "Think about the solution," he told himself, "not the problem. You are the seeker. I need you to do something, wizard. I think it is time for us to disappear. Rall has followed us long enough. What can you do about that cloud?" "You know, I think you're right. I only wish I knew how it was hooked to you, so I could unhook it. But I can't figure it out, so I will have to do something else." He contemplatively drew his finger and thumb down the sharp sides of his jaw. "Has it rained or been overcast since it first started following you?" Richard thought back, trying to remember every day. Most of the time he had been in a fog over his father's murder. It seemed so long ago. "The night before I found the snake vine, it rained in the Ven, but by the time I got there it had cleared off. No, no rain. I don't remember it being cloudy since my father's murder. At least nothing more than a few high, thin clouds. What does that mean?" "Well, it means I think there is a way to fool the cloud, even if I can't unhook it. Since the sky has been clear all that time, that means Rall probably has been responsible. He has moved the other clouds away so he could easily find this one. Simple but effective. How could he move the clouds away? He put a spell on this one to repel other clouds and somehow hook this one to you. Then why don't you put a stronger spell on it to attract other clouds? Before he realizes it, it will be lost, and he won't be able to find it to try to outdo your magic. If he does use stronger magic to move the clouds away to find this one, he won't know what you have done, and the stronger spell that pushes the clouds away will break the hook. Zed gave him an incredulous look. His eyes blinked.
Bags, Richard, you have gotten it exactly right. My boy, I think you would make an excellent wizard.
No thanks, I already have one impossible job. Zed drew back a little and frowned, but didn't say anything. His thin hand reached into his robes and pulled out a rock, tossing it on the ground in front of them. He stood, and his fingers spun around in a circle over the little rock until, suddenly, it popped into a large rock.
Zed, that's your cloud rock!
Actually, my boy, it's a wizard's rock. My father gave it to me long ago. The wizard's fingers stirred faster and faster until light came forth, sparkles and colors swirling around. He continued to stir, mixing and blending the light. There was no sound, only the pleasant smell of a spring rain. At last the wizard seemed satisfied.
"Step up on the rock, my boy!"
Unsure at first, Richard stepped into the light. It tingled and felt warm against his skin, as if he were lying in the hot summer sun without clothes after a swim. He let himself bask in the warm, safe feeling, gave himself over to it. His hands floated outward from his sides until they were horizontal. He tilted his head back, took deep breaths, and closed his eyes. It felt wondrous. Like floating in water, only he was floating in light. Exhilaration soaked through him. His mind felt a buoyant, timeless connection to everything around him. He was one with the trees, the grass, the bugs, the birds, the animals all around, the water, the very air itself. Not a separate being, but part of a whole. He understood the interconnection of everything. In a new way, saw himself as inconsequential and empowered at the same time. He saw the world through the eyes of all the creatures around him. It was a shocking, marvelous insight. He let himself soar into a bird that flew overhead, saw the world through its eyes, hunted with it, hungry and needful for mice, watched the campfire below, the people sleeping. Richard let his identity scatter to the winds. He became no one and everyone. Felt the heat of their needs, smelled their fear, tasted their joy, understood their desires, and then let it all melt away into nothingness, until there was a void where he stood, alone in the universe, the only living thing. The only thing existing at all. Then he let the light flood through him, light that brought forth the others that had used this very rock, Zed's father, and the wizards before that, for untold years, thousands of years, one and all. Their essence flowed through him, shared themselves with him as tears streamed down his cheeks at the wonder of it all. Zed's hands sprang forward, loosing his magic dust. It swirled about Richard, glittering fluidly, until he was at the center of its vortex. The sparkles tightened their rotation and gathered at his chest. With a tinkling sound like a crystal chandelier in the wind, the dust climbed away into the sky as if climbing a kite string, taking the sound with it as it went higher and higher until it reached the cloud. The cloud took in the magic dust and was lit from within by roiling colors. All across the horizon lightning flashed, ragged streaks ripping this way and that, called forth, eager, expectant. All at once, the lightning stopped. The illumination in the cloud faded and was gone, and the light from the wizard's rock pulled itself inward until it was extinguished. There was sudden silence. Richard was there again, standing on a simple rock. He looked wide-eyed at Zed's smiling face. "Zed," he whispered, "now I know why you stand on this rock all the time. I've never felt anything like that in my life. I had no idea." Zed smiled knowingly.
"You're a natural, my boy. You held your arms just right. Your head had the proper tilt. You even arched your back correctly. You took to it like a duckling to a pond. You have all the makings of a fine wizard."
He leaned forward gleefully.
"Now just try to imagine doing it naked."
"It makes a difference?" Richard asked in amazement.
"Of course, the clothes interfere with the experience."
Zed put his arm around Richard's shoulder.
"Someday I will let you try it."
"Zed, why did you have me do that? It wasn't necessary. You could have done it."
"How do you feel now?"
"Oh, I don't know. Different. Relaxed. More clear-headed. I guess not as overpowered, not as depressed."
"That's why I let you do it, my friend, because you needed it. You have had a hard night. I can't change the problems, but I could help you feel better."
"Thank you, Zed."
"Go get some sleep. It's my watch now."
He gave Richard a wink.
"If you ever change your mind about becoming a wizard, I would be proud to welcome you into the Brotherhood."
Zed held up his hand. Out of the darkness, the piece of cheese he had thrown away floated back to him. Chapter 14. Chase reined in his horse.
"Here, this will be a good place."
He led the other three off the trail through an open tract of long-dead spruce, the silver-gray skeleton standing bare of all but a few branches and an occasional wisp of dull green moss. The soft ground was littered with the rotting corpses of the former monarchs. Brown bogweed, its broad, flat leaves laid down in haphazard fashion by past storms, looked like a tangled sea of dead snakes underfoot. The horses picked their way carefully among the tangle. Warm air, heavy with humidity, carried the fetid smell of decay. A fog of mosquitoes followed them as they went, the only things alive, as far as Richard could tell. As open as this place was, little brightness was offered by the sky, as a thick, uniform overcast of clouds hung oppressively close to the ground. Trailers of mist dragged across the silver spikes of the trees that remained standing, leaving them wet and slick. Chase led the way for Zed and then Kaelin, with Richard following behind, watching over them as they twisted their way along. Visibility was limited to less than a few hundred feet, and even though Chase didn't seem to be concerned, Richard kept a sharp lookout. Anything could sneak up close before they would be able to see it. All four swatted at the mosquitoes, and except for Zed, they kept their cloaks tight for protection. Zed, who shunned wearing a cloak, nibbled on the remnants of lunch, looking about as if on a sightseeing excursion. Richard had an excellent sense of direction, but was glad they had Chase to lead them. Everything in the bog looked the same, and he knew from experience how easy it would be to become lost. Since Richard had stood on the Wizard's Rock the night before, he felt the weight of his responsibilities less of a burden and more of an opportunity to be part of something right. He didn't feel the danger any less, but felt more strongly his need to be part of stopping Rawl. He saw his part in the scheme of things as a chance to help others who had no chance to fight Dark and Rawl. He knew he couldn't back away. That would be the end of him, and a lot of others. Richard watched Kaelin's body sway as she rode, her shoulders moving to the horse's rhythm. He wished he could take her to places he knew of in the Heartland Woods, secret places of beauty and peace, far back in the mountains, show her the waterfall he had found, and the cave behind it, have lunch by a quiet forest pond with her, take her into town, buy her something pretty, take her someplace, any place, where she would be safe. He wanted her to be able to smile without having to worry every minute if her enemies were getting closer. After last night, he felt that the first part, his fantasy of being with her, was just an empty wish. With a hand in the air, Chase brought them to a halt. "This is the place." Richard looked around. They were still in the middle of an endless, dead, dried-up bog. He didn't see any boundary. It all looked the same in every direction. They tethered their horses to a fallen log and followed Chase a short distance farther on foot. "The boundary," Chase announced, holding his arm out at the introduction. "I don't see anything," Richard said. Chase smiled. "Watch." He walked on steadily, slowly. As he went forward, a green glow formed around him, at first hardly perceptible. It grew stronger, brighter, until after another 20 steps it became a sheet of green light pressing against him as he proceeded. Stronger close to him and fading away about 10 feet to the sides and above, growing larger with every step. It was like green glass, wavy and distorted, but Richard could see through it, see the dead trees beyond. Chase stopped and returned. The green sheet, and then the green glow, faded and vanished as he came back. Richard had always thought the boundary would be a wall of some sort, something that could be seen. "That's it?" Richard felt a little let down. "What more do you want? Now, watch this." Chase searched the ground, picking up branches, testing each for strength. Most were rotten and broke easily. Finally, he found one, about 12 feet long, that was strong enough to suit him. He carried it back into the glowing light until he reached the sheet of green. Holding the branch by the thick end, he passed the rest through the wall. 6 feet away, the end of the stick disappeared as he pushed it forward, until he was holding what appeared to be a 6-foot stick instead of a 12-foot branch. Richard was perplexed. He could see beyond the wall, but not the other end of the stick. It didn't seem possible. As soon as Chase had pushed the stick in as far as he dared, it jumped violently. There was no sound. He hauled it back and returned to the others. He held the splintered end of a now 8-foot stick toward them. The end was covered with slaver. "Harthounds," he said with a grin. Zed seemed bored. Kalin was not amused. Richard was astounded. Since he seemed to have an audience of only one, Chase grabbed a fistful of Richard's shirt and dragged him off. "Come on, I'll show you what it's like." Chase locked his right arm together with Richard's left as they proceeded, cautioning Richard, "Go slow, I'll let you know when we've gone far enough. Keep hold of my arm." They walked ahead slowly. Green light began. With each step it became more intense, but it was different from when Richard had watched Chase go in by himself. Then the light had been to Chase's sides and above him. Now it was all about. There was a buzzing sound, like 1,000 bumblebees. With each step the sound became deeper, but not louder. The green light became deeper, too, and the surrounding wood darker, as if night were falling. Then the sheet of green was in front of them, materializing out of nothing, with the green glow everywhere else. Richard could hardly see the woods anymore. He looked back and couldn't see Zed or Kalin at all. "Easy now," Chase warned. They pushed against the green sheet as they stepped slowly ahead. Richard could feel the pressure of it against his body. Then everything else blacked out, as if he were in a cave at night, with a green glow around Chase and himself. Richard held Chase's arm tighter. buzzing felt like it was vibrating his chest. With the next step, the green sheet of the wall changed suddenly.
"Far enough," Chase said, his voice echoing.
The wall had become darkly transparent, as if Richard were looking into a deep pond in the dark woods. Chase stood still, watching him. There were forms on the other side. Inky black shapes wavered in the gloom on the other side of the wall, specters floating in the deep. The dead in their lair. Something closer and faster moved nearer to them.
"The hounds," Chase said.
Richard felt an odd sensation of longing. Longing for the blackness. The humming wasn't a sound, he realized. It was voices. Voices that murmured his name. Thousands of distant voices called out to him. The black shapes were gathering, calling to him, holding their arms out to him. He felt a sudden, unexpected stab of loneliness. Felt the solitude of his life, of all life. Why did he need the pain when they were waiting, waiting to welcome him? Never alone again. The black shapes drifted closer in the gloom, calling to him. And he began to see their faces. It was as if he were looking through murky water. They came closer. He longed to step through, to be there with them. And then he saw his father. Richard's heart pounded. His father called out to him mournfully in a long, sorrowful cry. His arms thrust out, trying desperately to clutch for his son. He was just beyond the wall. Richard's heart felt as if it were going to rip with yearning. It had been so long since he had seen his father. He wailed for him, hungered to touch him. He wouldn't have to be afraid ever again. He had only to reach his father. Then he would be safe. Safe. Forever. Richard tried to reach out to his father, tried to go to him, tried to step through the wall. Something was holding his arm. Irritated, he pulled harder. Someone held him from his father. He screamed for whoever held him to let go. His voice sounded hollow, empty. Then he was being pulled away from his father. His anger roared to life. Someone was trying to drag him back by his arm. In a rage, he grabbed his sword. A big hand clamped over his with an iron grip. Screaming in unrestrained fury, he struggled mightily to free the sword, but the big hands held tight, dragging him, stumbling, from his father. Richard struggled, but was hauled away. The green wall came up suddenly in place of the darkness as he was pulled back. Chase was dragging him away from it, through the green light. The world returned with a sickening jolt. The dry, dead bog returned. Suddenly aware, Richard was appalled at what he had almost done. Chase released his sword hand. Shaking, Richard put it on the big man's shoulder for support, struggling to catch his breath as they stepped out of the green light. Relief washed over him. Chase leaned over a little, searching his eyes. "All right?" Richard nodded, too overwhelmed to speak. The sight of his father had brought back the devastating grief. He had to concentrate just to breathe, to stand. His throat hurt. He realized he had been choking, but hadn't been aware of it at the time. Terror raced through Richard's mind as he realized how close he had come to stepping through the wall, to death. He had been totally unprepared for what had happened. If Chase hadn't been there holding on to him, he would be dead now. He had tried to give in to the underworld. He felt as if he didn't know himself. How could he have wanted to give himself over to it? Was he that weak? That frail? Richard's head swirled with pain. He couldn't clear the vision of his father's face from his mind. the way his father longed for him, called to him, so desperate. He ached to be with him. It would have been so easy. The image haunted his mind, refusing to let go.
He didn't want to let it go. He wanted to go back.
He could feel the pull, even as he resisted. Kaylin was there, waiting for them, at the edge of the green light as they emerged. She swept her arm protectively around his waist and tugged him away from Chase. With her other hand, she grabbed hold of his jaw, turning his head, making him look at her.
"Richard, listen to me. Think of something else. Concentrate. You have to think of something else. I want you to remember every intersection on every trail in the Heartland. Can you do that for me?
Please, do it now.
Remember every one for me."
He nodded, and started to remember the trails.
Kaylin turned to Chase in a fury, slapping him across his face as hard as she could. "You bastard!" she screamed. "Why would you do that to him?" Throwing all her weight into it, she slapped him again, her hair tossing across her face. Chase didn't try to stop her. "You did it on purpose. How could you do that?" She swung at him a third time, but this time he grabbed her wrist in mid-swing.
"Do you want me to tell you, or do you wish to go on hitting me?"
She jerked her hand away, glaring at him, her chest heaving. Some of her hair was stuck sideways across her face.
"Going through Kingsport is dangerous. It isn't straight through, it twists and turns. Some places it's very narrow. The two walls of the boundary almost touching. One step either way and you're gone. You've been through the boundary, so has Zed. You both understand. You can't see it until you start in. Otherwise, you don't know where it is. I only know because I've spent my life out here. It's even more dangerous now because it's failing. Even easier to walk through it. When you get in the pass, if something started chasing you, Richard could run into the underworld without even knowing what it was. That's no excuse. You could have warned him. I've never had a child yet who had the proper respect for fire until they put their hand in it once. No amount of telling is worth doing it once. If Richard didn't understand what it was like before he went into Kingsport, he wouldn't come out the other side. Yes, I took him there on purpose, to show him, to keep him alive. You could have told him."
Chase shook his head. "No, he had to see it."
"Enough," Richard said, his head clear at last.
They all turned to him.
"A day has yet to go by when one of you three doesn't scare the wits out of me. But I know you all have my best interests at heart. Right now we have more important things to worry about. Chase, how do you know the boundary is failing? What's different?"
"The wall is breaking down. Before, you couldn't see through the green into the darkness. You couldn't see anything on the other side."
"Chase is right," Zed offered. "I could see it from here."
"How long until it fails?" Richard asked the wizard. Zed shrugged.
"It's hard to tell."
"Then guess," Richard shot back. "Give me some kind of idea, your best guess."
"It will last at least 2 weeks, but not more than 6 or 7.
Richard thought a minute.
"Can you use your magic to strengthen it?"
"I don't have that kind of power."
"Chase, do you think Rawl knows about Kingsport?"
"How should I know?"
"Well, has anyone come through the pass?"
Chase thought about the question.
"Not that I know of."
"I doubt it," Zed added. "Rawl can travel the underworld. He doesn't need the pass. He's bringing the boundary down. I don't think he cares about a little pass."
"Caring is different from knowing," Richard said. "I don't think we should be standing here, and I'm worried he might know where we're going." Kaylin pulled the hair off her face. "What do you mean?" Richard gave her a sympathetic look. "Do you think it was your mother and sister you saw when you were in there?"
"I thought it was. Do you think otherwise?"
"I don't think that was my father." He looked to the wizard. "What do you think?"
"It's impossible to say. No one really knows all that much about the underworld."
"Dark and Rawl knows about it," Richard said bitterly.
"I don't think my father would want me in that manner. But I know Rawl would. So despite what my eyes tell me,
It's more likely that it was Darkon Rawl's disciples trying to take me. You said we couldn't go through the boundary because they were waiting for us to do so, waiting to get us. I think that was what I saw, his followers in the underworld. And they know right where I touch the wall. If I'm right, that means Rawl will soon know where we are. I don't want to be here to find out if I'm right.
Richard is right, Chase said, and we have to get to Scow Swamp before nightfall, before the Harthounds come out. It's the only safe place between here and South Haven. We'll reach South Haven before tomorrow night, and we'll be safe from the hounds there. The next day we will go see a friend of mine, Addie, the Bone Woman. She lives near the pass. We need her help to get through. But tonight, our only chance is the swamp.
Richard was about to ask what a Bone Woman was, and why they needed her help to cross the boundary, when a dark, shadowy form suddenly whipped out of the air, striking Chase so hard it threw him across several downed trees. With shocking speed, the black form wrapped around Kaylin's legs, whip-like, pulling her feet from under her. She screamed Richard's name as he dove, grabbing for her. They locked their hands around each other's wrists. Both were dragged across the ground toward the boundary. Zed's fingers threw fire over their heads. It shrieked past and vanished. Another black appendage struck out at the wizard with lightning speed, knocking the old man through the air. Richard hooked a foot around a branch on a log. Rotten, it tore from the stump. He twisted his body around, trying to dig his heels into the ground. His boots slid across the wet bogweed. He jammed his heels into the earth, but wasn't strong enough to hold the two of them from being dragged across the ground. He needed his hands free.
"Put your arms around my waist!"
he yelled. Kaylin lunged, throwing her arms around him, holding tight. The sinuous black thing wrapped around her legs undulated, getting a stronger grip on her. She screamed as it squeezed. Richard yanked the sword free, filling the air with its ringing. The green light began to glow around them as they were dragged in. Anger flooded through him. Richard's worst fear was coming to pass. Something was trying to take Kaylin. The green light brightened. Being hauled across the ground, he couldn't reach the thing that pulled them. Kaylin held him hard by the waist. Her legs were too far away, and the thing that held her legs was farther still.
"Kaylin, let go of me!"
She was too terrified to do it. She clutched him tightly, desperately, panting in pain. The green sheet came up as they were dragged in. The buzzing was loud in his ears.
"Let go!"
he yelled again. He tried to pry her hands from his waist. The trees of the bog started to fade into darkness. Richard could feel the pressure of the wall. He couldn't believe how strongly she held him. On his back, sliding across the ground, he tried to reach behind himself to pull her wrists away from him, but could not. Their only chance was for him to get up.
"Kaylin! You have to let go or we're dead! I won't let them get you! Trust me! Let go!"
He didn't know if he was telling her the truth, but he was sure it was their only chance. Her head pressed against his stomach as she clutched his body. Kaylin looked up at him, her face contorting in pain as the black thing squeezed. She screamed, then let go. In a blink, Richard was on his feet. As he jumped up, the dark wall materialized abruptly in front of him. His father reached out. He unleashed his rage, swinging the sword with every fiber of violence he possessed. The blade swept through the barrier, through the thing he knew wasn't his father. The dark shape wailed, exploding into a cloud of nothingness. Kaylin's feet were at the wall. The dark thing enfolded tightly around her legs, compressing and pulling. He brought the sword up. Murderous need surged through him.
"Richard, no! It's my sister!"
He knew it wasn't, just as it wasn't his father. He gave himself over completely to the hot need and brought the sword down as hard as he could. Again it swept through the wall, slashed through the repulsive thing that held Kaylin. There was a confusion of flashes, unearthly wailing and keening. Kaylin's legs were free. She lay sprawled on her stomach. Without looking to see what else was happening, Richard pushed his arm under her waist and lifted her in a single motion, scooping her off the ground. He held her tight against himself and held the sword toward the wall as he retreated from the boundary. Backing away steadily, he watched for any movement, any aggression. They left the green light. He kept going until they were well clear, beyond the horses. When he stopped at last and released her, Kaylin turned and threw her arms around him, shaking. He had to struggle to restrain the rage that urged him to go back in and attack. He knew he would have to put the sword away to quell the anger, the need, but he didn't dare to. "The others, where are they?" she asked in a panic. "We have to find them." Kaylin pushed away from him and started to run back. Richard snatched her by the wrist, almost yanking her from her feet. "Stay here!" he yelled far more angrily than required, pushing her to the ground. Richard found Zed in a heap, unconscious. As he bent to the old man, something swept out in a rush over his head. His anger erupted. He spun with the sword, the blade sweeping through the dark form. The stump reeled back into the boundary with a shrill screeching, the severed part vaporizing in midair. Richard picked up Zed with one arm, threw him over his shoulder like a sack of grain, and carried him to Kaylin, where he laid him gently on the ground. She held the wizard's head in her lap, inspecting for wounds. Richard ducked low as he ran back, but the expected attack didn't come. He wished it would. He longed for the fight, hungered to strike. He found Chase jammed partway under a log. Richard seized the mail and pulled him over. Blood oozed from a gash on the side of Chase's head. Debris was stuck to the wound. Richard's mind raced, trying to think what to do. He couldn't lift Chase with one arm, and he didn't dare to put the sword away. He did know he didn't want Kaylin to come help. He wanted her to stay safely away. Getting a good grip on the warden's leather tunic, Richard started dragging him. The slick bog weed eased the effort somewhat, but it was still difficult, because he had to go around several fallen trees. Surprisingly, nothing attacked. Maybe he had hurt it, or killed it. He wondered if it was possible to kill something already dead. The sword had magic. Richard wasn't sure what it was capable of. He wasn't even sure if the things in the boundary were dead. He finally reached Kaylin and Zed and dragged Chase close. The wizard was still unconscious. Kaylin's face was white with worry. "What are we going to do?" Richard scanned around. "We can't stay here and we can't leave them. Let's put them over the horses and get out of here. We'll look to their wounds as soon as we're a safe distance away." The clouds were thicker than before, and mist covered everything with a wet sheen. As he checked in every direction, Richard put the sword away and easily lifted Zed over his horse. Chase was more difficult. He was big, and all his weapons were heavy. Blood throbbed from the wound on the side of his forehead, soaking his hair, and hanging him over the side of the horse made it bleed more. Richard decided he couldn't leave it untended. He quickly retrieved an ohm leaf and a strip of cloth from a pack. He crumpled the leaf to make it seep its healing fluid, pressed it against the wound, and had Kaylin wrap the cloth around Chase's head. The cloth soaked through almost immediately, but he knew the ohm leaf would stop the bleeding in a short time. Richard helped Kaylin up onto her horse. He could tell that her legs hurt more than she would admit. He gave her the reins of Zed's horse, mounted up, took Chase's horse, and then carefully got his bearings. He knew they would have a hard time finding the trail. The mist was getting heavy, visibility limited. There seemed to be ghosts watching from the shadows in every direction. He didn't know if he should lead or follow Kaylin. Didn't know how best to protect her, so he rode beside her. Zed and Chase weren't tied down and could easily slip off the horses, so they had to take it slow. The dead spruce looked the same in every direction, and they couldn't go in a straight line because they had to cut back and forth around fallen trees. Richard spat out mosquitoes that kept flying into his mouth. The sky was the same dark steel gray everywhere. There was no chance to tell where the sun was, to get oriented. After a time, Richard wasn't at all sure they were going in the right direction. It seemed they should have reached the trail already. He took fixes from landmark trees, and when they reached each one, he would pick a new one farther ahead, hoping they were traveling in a straight line. To do it properly, he knew he had to be able to line up at least three trees to make sure the line of travel was straight. But he couldn't see that far in the mist. He couldn't be sure he wasn't leading them in circles. Even if he was going in a straight line, he wasn't sure the direction was toward the trail. "Are you sure we're going the right way?" Kaelin asked. "It all looks the same." "No. But at least we haven't run into the boundary. Do you think we should stop and tend to them?" "We don't dare. For all I know, we could be 10 feet from the underworld."
Kaelin looked around, worried.
Richard gave thought to having her wait with the other two while he went ahead and scouted for the trail, but dismissed the idea, as he was afraid he might not be able to find her again. They had to stay together. He started to wonder what they would do if they couldn't find their way out before dark. How would they protect themselves against the Heart Hounds? If there were enough of them, even the sword couldn't hold them all off at once. Chase had said they had to get to the swamp before nightfall. He hadn't said why or how the swamp could protect them. The brown bogweed was an endless sea all around, with hulks of trees aground in it everywhere. An oak appeared off to their left, then some more, some with leaves shimmering dark green and wet in the mist. This was not the way they had come in. Richard turned them to the right a little, following the edge of the dead bog, hoping it would lead them back to the trail. Shadows from the brush among the oaks watched them. He told himself it was his imagination that made the shadows seem to have eyes. There was no wind, no movement, no sound. He was angry with himself for being lost, despite how easily it could happen in this place. He was a guide. Getting lost was unforgivable. Richard breathed out in relief when he saw the trail at last. They quickly dismounted and checked their two charges. There was no change in Zed, but at least Chase's wound had stopped bleeding. Richard had no idea what to do for them. He didn't know if they had been knocked unconscious or if their condition was caused by some sort of magic from the boundary. Kaelin didn't know either.
"What do you think we should do?" she asked him.
Richard tried not to look as worried as he really was. "Chase said we had to get to the swamp or the hounds would get us. It won't do them any good to be laid out here and tended to while we wait for them to wake, only to have the hounds get us all. As I see it, we have only two choices. Leave them here or take them with us. There is no way I'm leaving them. Let's tie them down on the horses so they don't fall off and get to the swamp."
Kaelin agreed.
They worked quickly to lash their friends to the horses. Richard changed Chase's bandage and cleaned up the wound a little. The mist was changing to a light rain. He fished around in the packs, finding the blankets, and removed the oilcloth they were wrapped in. They put a blanket over each friend, then covered them with the oilcloth to keep them dry, criss-crossing rope over it all to hold it in place. When they were finished, Kaelin unexpectedly put her arms around him, hugging him close and tight for a moment, separating before he could return her gesture.
"Thank you for saving me," she said softly. "The boundary terrifies me."
She looked sheepishly up at him. "And if you remind me what I said about not coming after me, I'll kick you." She smiled as she looked up from under her eyebrows.
"Not a word. I promise."
He smiled back at her and pulled up the hood of her cloak, stuffing her hair into it to keep her dry in the rain. He pulled up his own hood, and they started off down the road. The woods were deserted. Rain dripped down through the tangle overhead. Branches reached around the trail like talons reaching to snatch both people and horses. Even without their riders' direction, the horses trotted their way carefully down the center of the road, their ears pricking from one side to the other, as if listening to the shadows. So dense was the thicket to each side that there was no chance they could take to the trees if they had to. Kaelin drew her cloak tighter. It was go on or go back. And there was no going back. They rode the horses hard the rest of the afternoon and evening. When the day's death began stealing away the soft gray light, they still had not reached the swamp, and there was no way to tell how much farther it was. Off through the tangled woods, they caught the sound of howling. Their breath caught in their throats. The Heart Hounds were coming. Chapter 15. The horses needed no encouragement to run. They fled down the road at full speed, their riders making no attempt to slow them, the howls of the Heart Hounds energizing the effort. Water and mud splashed as their hooves pounded the road, and rain ran in rivulets across their hides. But it was the mud that won out, streaking and caking on their legs and bellies. When the hounds shrieked, the horses returned a snort of fear. Richard let Kaelin take the lead, wanting to stay between her and their pursuers. The sounds of the Heart Hounds were still distant, off toward the boundary, but he knew by the way they were angling in from the left that it was only a matter of time until they would be overtaken. If they could turn to the right and head away from the boundary, there was a chance they could outrun the hounds. But the woods were thick, impenetrable. It would be slow going if they could find an opening, a sure death if they tried. Their only chance was to stay on the road and reach the swamp before they were caught. Richard didn't know how far it was, or what they would do once they reached it, only that they had to. Colors of day were washing out into a sullen gray as night approached. Rain pelted his face in small, cold pricks, heated and mingled with sweat, and ran down his neck. Richard watched the bodies of his two friends bounce and jostle on the horses, hoping they were tied down securely enough, hoping they were not badly hurt, hoping they would be conscious soon. The ride couldn't be doing them any good. Kaelin didn't turn or look back. She bent to her task, her dark form hunched forward over the horse as it ran. The road curved back and forth as it threaded its way around imposing misshapen oaks and rock outcroppings. Dead trees became more infrequent. Leaves of the oak, ash, and maple trees sealed the riders away from the last vestiges of the sky, darkening the trail even more. The hounds were getting closer when the road began to descend into a sodden wood of cedar. A good sign, Richard thought. Cedar often grew where the ground was wet. Kaelin's horse disappeared over the edge of a drop. Richard reached the brink of the sharp slope and saw her again, descending into a bowl in the earth. The tangled tops of trees spread out into the distance, at least as much of it as he could see in the mist and dim light. It was the Scow Swamp at last. The smell of wet and rot assailed him as he followed her in a rush, down through swirling trailers of mist that moved and spun at their passing. Sharp calls and hoots came from the dense vegetation. The howls of the Heart Hounds came from behind, closer now. Woody vines hung from slick twisted limbs of trees that stood in the water on roots looking like claws, and smaller leafy vines spiraled around anything strong enough to hold them. Everything seemed to be growing on top of something else, seeking to gain an advantage. Water, dark and still, sat in stagnant expanses, sneaking in under clumps of bushes, enveloping stands of fat-bottomed trees. Duckweed drifted in thick mats on the water, looking like manicured lawn. The lush growth seemed to swallow the sound of their horses' hooves, allowing only the native calls to echo across the waters. The road narrowed into a trail that struggled to remain above the black water, making